puddle and soaks my jeans. I really, really wish Genevieve could just forgive me. And I really, really wish I had another pair of pants right now. I finally go upstairs and leave my sneakers outside the door. I almost slide across her hallway in my wet socks, but she holds my hand and keeps me steady. I almost come up with a bullshit excuse about how we should stay out in the living room so I don't get her bed wet, when I actually have other reasons not to go in there. But she leads, and I follow. "The flea market is totally closed today," Genevieve says. She helps me out of my hoodie and pinches my nipple through my white shirt. It tickles, but I barely laugh. Bright side of having a terrible father is he's never around. We sit on her bed. She kisses me, and I know I should push her off, but I don't. "I love you," she says. And before there's an awkward silence where I don't say it back, she adds, "Remember that time your soaking wet jeans ruined my bed?" The game has lost its spark, and maybe it's because of my low spirits, but it's also very likely because it's kind of, sort of, definitely ridiculous to ask me to remember something that is happening right now. I'm being unfair. I sit up, cross my legs, hold her hands, and play along. "Remember that time we bought water guns last summer and I chased you around Fort Will Park? And you kept calling time out and sprayed me whenever I stopped?" She sits up and tangles her legs in mine. "Remember when we kept riding the subway back and forth last February because it was too cold to go outside?" Which was stupid, because it was even colder when we finally got off at 1 in the morning, I say, recalling how the cold was killing us, me especially, since I had wrapped my jacket around her. "Remember that time we were writing each other messages in a crossword puzzle during study hall and it got taken away? I lost the evidence on how you misspelled tornado with an E." Genevieve punches me. "Remember that time we texted each other using only song titles? And how about that time it started raining when we were rowing the boat in Central Park and I started panicking?" Genevieve laughs. While playing this game might be even worse than being intimate with her, it's both the right and wrong time to stroll down memory lane. "Remember that time we time traveled together on my birthday and you told me you loved me?" She climbs into my lap and feels up my arms. We look into each other's eyes, and when she leans in to kiss me, I let her, because this will be the last kiss we share, whether she knows it or not. Then she rests her chin on my shoulder, and I hold her, hard. "Remember that time I was a better boyfriend, who gave you happy memories like these?" I feel her try to pull back so she can meet my eyes again and tell me that I'm a good boyfriend, but I continue holding her because I can't look her in the face and do this. "I'm not the guy we're remembering anymore." She stops resisting. She holds me tighter, too, her nails digging into my arms.
"Are you? You are, aren't you?"
She's gotta be asking me if I'm breaking up with her, but I consider the chance that she's asking me if I'm a dude liker. I know this. The part of me that was playing straight for so long wants to lie and tell her that I can transform back into the person she needs me to be, except that's not who I am anymore, or who I ever should have been. So I just nod and say, "Yeah." I'm about to apologize and try to explain why, but she breaks free from my hug and sits at the edge of her bed with her back to me. Genevieve was the girl who brought me home after my dad killed himself and let me cry in a way I never would have in front of my friends. She tutored me in chemistry when I was failing, even though I was always too absorbed by her to actually pay attention. When her father started bringing home younger girls for the first time since her mother died, I distracted her with weekend outings, like a trip across the Brooklyn Bridge and people watching in Fort Will Park. and now she's the girl who won't let me hug her. It's because of him, she says. I bullshit her. I don't know what you're talking about. She's crying and doesn't let me see her face like usual, and she throws me my hoodie. You can go. So I do. Chapter 5. Another Fight. How to Play Skelzies. Some people draw their Skelzies boards with chalk, but we properly outlined ours with yellow paint against the black asphalt ground years ago. There are 13 numbered squares, box number 13 in the center, and you have to flick a cap across the board in numerical order. First person to hit all 13 wins. Making the caps has always been the coolest part. Whenever we go through gallons of milk or water in our homes, we keep the caps, or sometimes steal them right out of store fridges, and pour an even amount of candle wax inside so they have some weight and don't blow away whenever the wind surprises us. My mom likes skim milk, so my cap is blue with yellow wax from one of her Santeria candles. I'm playing with Baby Freddy, green cap, red wax, Brendan, red cap, orange wax, and Skinny Dave, blue cap, blue wax. Thomas should be joining us soon. Baby Freddy is on his knees and elbows, measuring the distance between the starting line and box number 13. If you get in the box on your first move, you automatically win. He flicks the cap, and it falls short. Brendan flicks his cap next, and it's like a comet both in appearance and its glide. He lands in box number 1. Then box number 2, and misses box number 3. Yo-ay! I was trading in some games yesterday, and guess what I found? Legend of Iris! I laugh. We bought it when we were 12 because there was a rumor that the developer, some beautiful girl in her late 20s, hid a picture of her ass in the game as some sort of erotic Easter egg. We played for hours, using cheat codes to speed the game along, but no dice. The great ass hunt of sixth grade. Good times. Yeah. Here's the thing. I remember genuinely being a girl like her when I was younger. I asked girls out on dates, was offered a blowjob at 14 if I pretended to be this girl's boyfriend to get her ex jealous, which I did, but pussied out when she unbuttoned my pants. And I only focused on the girls when watching straight porn. In January, I was freaking out about what to get Genevieve for Valentine's Day, only for her to tell me a couple weeks later she doesn't believe in celebrating it. Major relief, but also super real. I play my turn after Skinny Dave goes, and it's a direct hit with Baby Freddy's cap, sending it out of the board. I go again and miss box number 1. By the time Thomas shows up, Brendan and I are on our way to box number 7. After my turn, we fist bump, and I hand him the cap I made for him. Green top, yellow wax. Can I jump in, guys? No way you'll catch up, Brendan says. Is that a challenge? Sure. Maybe you'll beat Skinny Dave at least. Thomas lines his cap to the left of the starting line, flicks, and lands right in box number 13. Brendan kicks his cap. That's motherfucking bullshit. We don't have to count it, Thomas offers. New game, Brendan calls out as he retrieves his cap. He makes Thomas go first, and I feel like Thomas might have missed box number 13 on purpose this time around. I go next and get as far as box number 4 before missing. Thomas asks, how'd Genevieve take the news yesterday? Brendan is about to flick his cap when he looks up. What news? I sort of broke up with Genevieve. Brendan stands. You're shitting me! What? No, things are still crazy at home, and Brendan picks up his cap and hurls it. Why the fuck does this kid know before us? What makes him so fucking special? Stop playing like you've been around to help me figure my shit out. Before I can do anything to stop it, before I can actually register that this is happening, my sort of best friend Brendan charges toward my best friend Thomas. Brendan snuffs him in the chin and lays him out. Get out of my friend's head! Before Brendan can land a sixth punch, I tackle him to the ground and pin him down, my arm against his throat. Leave him alone! I'm breathing hard. I press down on his throat harder when he tries flipping me back with his legs, an old wrestling trick he used to be great at. I bet he's regretting teaching me how to fight. I get off and check on Thomas while Brendan catches his breath. Thomas isn't bleeding, but I can tell he's doing his best not to cry. You're okay. You're good, I tell him. I help him up, and he wraps his arm around my shoulders. Baby Freddy and Skinny Dave kneel by Brendan, and they all watch us walk off.
I'm sorry, Thomas tells me. I didn't know you hadn't said anything.
Stop. It's not your fault. He's a fucking asshole. He rubs his face, and his eyes squint. A tear escapes.
You didn't have to take my side, Stretch.
I kind of, sort of, definitely always will. Chapter 6 Side B. Defending Thomas yesterday was instinctive, but not easy. If someone were to write my biography, there would be many stories about Brendan and Baby Freddy and me crazy and the rest of the crew. They're my history. But I slept okay last night, knowing I chose the person who agrees with a happy ending I'm building toward, not the ones who would punch in a face to demolish it. I brought beer over to Thomas's house earlier today. Perk of being a cashier at Good Foods is how I get away with checking people's ID, but no one has to check mine when I cash out. I sit up against his bedroom wall, chugging back the rest of my third Corona as Thomas twists his fourth PBR open. I get another two, not just to catch up, but because I need a drink when I catch Thomas icing his bruised eye with a freezing can. I'm sorry for the thousandth time. I don't know what got into him.
He thinks I'm stealing you away from them, Thomas says,
like it's okay he got snuffed because my friends are jealous of all the errand time he gets.
Do you ever think you'll tell them?
Side A. Maybe one day I'll move away and send a postcard saying, Hey, I like guys. Don't worry, I never liked any of you because you all suck. Thomas looks left and right, then over his shoulder, and peeks out his window.
Sorry, just making sure Brendan's not hiding around here to punch me before I ask this next question.
We both laugh.
You think you'll ever tell Genevieve?
I don't know. I haven't even heard from her for the past couple of days. I have words I can say, I guess, but I'm scared she'll take it as a blow. Like she turned me this way or something.
I'd pay to be there for that conversation.
It won't be for another few eons, so hang tight.
Who's your celebrity crush?
What?
I'm trying to help you get more comfortable with everything.
Okay, then. Emma Watson, I answer. He raises a large, skeptical eyebrow. Look, she was awesome as Lexa the Enchantress in the Scorpius Hawthorne movies, and if she wanted to marry me, I would magically be straight again. But, on the dude side of things, I'm going to have to go with Andrew Garfield. Slinging around with Spider-Man would be badass. How about you?
Natalie Portman really won me over in Garden State. I even loved her in Star Wars Episode I.
She was the only good thing about that trilogy. Thomas says. Not exactly what I was hoping to hear, but I've got 3.5 drinks in me on an empty stomach, so I'm feeling ballsy.
Who would your guy crush be?
Like if I had to go gay for someone?
Yeah.
Thomas lays back and rests his head on his pillow, kicking his knees up. He chugs his PBR like a funnel until it's empty.
I gotta go with my dude, Ryan Gosling. He has swag, and I couldn't help but want to be him after watching Drive.
I would ride shotgun with him, I agree.
PBR me.
I toss a can to him like an overhead basketball pass, and we cheer when he catches it. He opens it, and beer sprays all over him. I'm drunk laughing on the floor, which is the same as regular laughing, except it's obnoxiously louder and only happens when you're drunk. Thomas is drunk laughing, too, while he changes into a new shirt. He's got to know always watching him change is killer on me. A turn-on with no payoff. He puts on a yellow sleeveless shirt.
Get up. I'm going to teach you how to fight.
No thanks, Stretch.
Unless you're bench-pressing girls all the time, you're wasting your muscles.
I've seen wrestling.
Wrestling's fake. Come on! Get up!
He puts down his PBR and joins me in the middle of the room.
Awesome. Next time Brendan or anyone comes at you, you're going to lay them out.
How to street fight.
You are your own weapon. But if you happen to have some brass knuckles or a baseball bat in a particularly nasty fight, more power to you.
Okay, for starters, we're going to... I cut myself off and trap him in a headlock.
Never wait for someone else to swing first.
I let him go, and he wobbles. Before he can protest, I swing and stop an inch from his face. The nose is a good spot to aim for, because even if you miss, you have a good chance at clocking them in the jaw or eye. But if you're dead set on breaking the nose, a headbutt is the way to go. I grab his shoulders, lean my forehead against his, and stare into his somewhat intoxicated eyes as I fake a headbutt into his nose over and over.
That's a lot of violence to absorb in 1 minute, Thomas says. I think I'm good for the night.
You'll be good when... I swing at him again, but this time he catches my wrist with one hand and grabs my leg with the other, pinning me to the floor.
Thomas smiles. I told you I'm good for now.
He pats my shoulder and sits across from me on the floor.
We'll go for round two later on. I'm just happy you'll be able to put those muscles to use. Maybe I should work out more, too. At least for the look. I'll be your friend, muscles or not, Thomas says.
I'm going to tattoo that promise on you as a reminder, I say.
I'm never getting a tattoo. What if I decide I want to take up underwear modeling? I can't have YOLO running across my heart.
Thomas jokes, or at least I hope he's joking. I get up and grab a marker from his desk. I sit down next to him and palm his shoulder.
You're getting a tattoo right now.
What do you want?
No way! He says, laughing.
I know he wants one.
Come on! If you don't end up as an underwear model, what tattoo would you want?
I'm scared of needles.
This is a marker.
Fine.
How about one of your little fortune cookie quotes?
Surprise me. I hold his wrist, steady his arm, and begin drawing a stick figure holding a movie slate. It'll one day be very meta, if meta is still a thing. My scar is pressed against his forearm, and if I had as much hope in life back then as I do now, it would have never existed in the first place. This all feels so right, and I like my chances with telling him side B.
Thomas?
Stretch?
Were you shocked when I told you side A?
A little.
You're just so different from any other friend I've ever had. And it's also why I wanted to be your friend in the first place, Thomas says. It's funny that he says this while I shade in his stick figure eyebrows, one of my favorite things about him.
But when you told me, I didn't care. I was honored you trusted me.
Of course. You're my favorite person, I say without a doubt.
Thomas isn't just someone I want in my life. I need him to stay happy, to keep the death out of my life, to make being who I am easier.
It sounds stupid, but I think you're my happiness.
I rub his shoulder. When he turns to me, I trace his eyebrows from one to the other, and I lean in and kiss him. Thomas pushes me off and gets up.
Dude, I'm sorry. I'm straight, you know?
Hearing those words, that lie, feels like every wrong thing in the world. Heart attacks, gunshots, starvation, fathers who leave you on your own. I blink to fight back the tears.
I thought that you...
Sorry, fuck. I've just had too many drinks. I feel like a fucking idiot. Fuck. Sorry, fuck. I look up at him and he's covering his mouth. Say something.
I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do.
You can forget about it. What I did and what I said. I can't lose my best friend.
Yeah, I can forget, Stretch.
I'm going to go home. Sleep off everything. It's raining. He says it so matter-of-fact that his words loop through my head again, as if they should have been obvious.
I'm straight, you know. I'm straight, you know.
I'm straight, you know.
Do you want an umbrella?
It's just rain. He tells me something, but I can't hear him over the echoes. He reaches out from my shoulder and pulls back.
I'll talk to you later.
I feel his eyes on me as I let myself out of his window, almost knocking his Buzz Lightyear toy off the ledge. I reach the bottom and turn around to see if he's been following me. But he's not there, not even looking out his window. I'm alone. Garbage tumbling by creates hurtling shadows underneath street lamps. I stop at an almost even distance between my house and his, feeling like I belong nowhere now. I collapse onto the curb and just sit there under the expectation Thomas will come for me. And the reality is killer. Chapter 7 Late Night / Early Morning Thoughts 12:22 a.m. The moon needs to get the fuck out of my face. We don't have blinds, of course, and I can never keep my back to the window because Eric's side of the room is always glowing from late-night gaming. I sit up and see Brendan, Skinny Dave, and me crazy passing a cigarette around on the jungle gym. I fall back down so they don't throw a handball at my window. I reach for my sketchbook and see the black ink from the marker on my fingertips. I can't draw right now. 1:19 a.m. I can't even remember what I like about Thomas. I latched onto the first person who always had a smile for me and who didn't run away when I told him my secret. Everything I felt was an illusion, nothing more. He reminds me of when I turned 14 and my family stopped caring about my birthday as much, when my friends made fun of me for wearing the same shirt 2 days in a row, even though it wasn't dirty. His eyebrows are ungodly large, a couple of his teeth are crooked, and he's mastered the art of lying so well he made me believe he doesn't lie, when actually the best liars are the ones who fool you by claiming they never lie at all. 2:45 a.m. I never forgot what I like about Thomas. I'm the liar, not him. I lied to Genevieve, to my friends, to everyone. But I've pushed my limit, and here's the truth. This is the most painfully confusing time in my life, and he's the first person who said all the right words to me, and reminds me of the first days of summer, where you leave home without a jacket. And my favorite songs playing over and over. And now, he may never talk to me again. 5:58 a.m. I remember this time last year, whenever I was in insomniac mode, I could put on my shoes and go visit my dad down the block at work. I remember this time 2 months ago. I could call Genevieve, who would wake up to talk to me. I remember this time last week. I could go outside and talk about nothing with Brendan and the guys if they were still out. I remember this time yesterday. I could be sleeping over at Thomas's house without it being weird. I have lost all these people. I'm left with a brother who snores. I'm left with post-programming infomercials about acne medicine, suicide prevention lines, and animal charities. I get up to turn off the TV before reruns of old and unfunny comedies come on. But one final ad catches my attention. Lateo. It promises forgetting and moving on. I sneak into my mom's room and steal her pamphlet. Chapter 8. Memories and Sucker Punches. I want to undergo the Lateo procedure. It was originally just an insane thought, the kind of thoughts one has at 6 a.m. after a sleepless night when life is sucking. But I spent my weekend researching all things Lateo, and there's actually hope for me. The main red flag is all the controversy surrounding the unsuccessful procedures lately. But I discovered, for every backfire all over the country in the past month, there were 12 successful alterations. If others believe this procedure is worth the risk of ending up brain dead, I can't help but agree that it's probably better than me trying to you-know-what myself again, out of pure defeat. Lateo is this place of second chances. I read a lot of the stories provided online through Lateo's site, all names and intimate details redacted, of course. A soldier, known only as F7298D, was crippled by post-traumatic stress disorder until Lateo stepped in and buried the worst of his memories. Now F7298D isn't suffering from disturbing dreams and sleeplessness. A mother of twins, M3237E, was afflicted with agoraphobia after witnessing a bomb go off during a marathon. Lateo hid the memory away so M3237E no longer fears the outdoors and can open more doors for herself and her children. And they take care of kids like me, too. A 17-year-old girl, S0021P, was sexually abused by her uncle, and even though he's in prison, she began burning her thighs. Lateo gave her the power to move on and trust her family again by suppressing past events where she blamed herself for leading her uncle on. Another 17-year-old, J1930S, suffered from crazy panic attacks and always assumed the worst scenario possible if his family wasn't home when he returned from school. Lateo figured out the source of his problems and healed him. Lateo takes our stories seriously. But that's not what has me itching for the procedure. I stumbled on a story of a 50-year-old father in Russia, A1799R, who realized he spent half his life being someone he isn't, and a quarter of that time married to a woman he doesn't love. Can't love. But he couldn't uproot his family, couldn't abandon them or abandon Russia for a more accepting country, so he flew out here and asked Lateo if they could make him straight. And Lateo played with his head and did it. I followed that article to another about a 19-year-old teenager, P6710S, who wanted to escape bullying and this feeling of wrongness. After her parents tried everything in their power to make her feel accepted, they turned to Lateo, who straightened her out. I don't want to be me. I don't want to second guess if my friends are going to be okay with me being me. And more importantly, I don't want to see what happens if they're not. I don't want to be someone who can't be friends with Thomas, because if there's anything worse than not being able to be with him, it's knowing our friendship will ultimately have an expiration date if being around him becomes impossible.
I know not being me will be a lie. But I know I'm doing myself a favor in the long run if I can somehow book a Lateo procedure. Because as I stand now, I have so much bullshit to look out for. Happiness shouldn't be this hard. The downside to this whole Lateo pursuit. You need an adult if you're a minor seeking a consultation. I'm already down one parent, and I'm sure as shit not asking Eric to accompany me. But this means I'm going to have to tell my mom what kind of Lateo procedure I want, which sort of feels like when she used to take me to the barber shop and would tell the barber what kind of haircut I wanted. Except Lateo isn't a barber shop. It's more of a tattoo removal clinic, if anything, and this means I gotta tell her everything. I run to catch her at Washington Hospital before she can leave for her night shift at the supermarket. Considering she's only right across the street, this is hardly the most difficult thing I've done today. No, that would have been when I was working a morning shift at Good Foods, and I smelled Thomas's cologne on a customer, and my heart just fucking hurt. Surviving that was today's battle. I'm done fighting. I get to Mom's office, where she's ending a call with someone. Aaron! I close the door behind me and sit down. The truth is kind of, sort of, insanely crushing. But if I tell her, and she gets behind my plan, which she will because she wants what's best for me, then I can make a happy liar out of myself. Best of all, I'll probably forget this awkward moment ever even playing out. What's wrong, my son? Are you feeling okay? I'm okay, I say. And okay feels like too strong a word, because I'm not even that. It's all hitting me hard right now, the rejection, the fear, the uncertainty. So thank God I'm here with my mom, because I might need one of her hugs that always made me feel better as a kid. Like that time I got in trouble with security for running in the hallways, or when Skinny Dave's father made fun of me for being a waste of height during a basketball game, or every other time I was feeling ashamed or worthless. Talk to me, Mom says, sneaking a peek at the clock on her monitor screen. I know she's not rushing me, especially when she has no idea what the hell I want to say. But our bank status is no doubt still on her mind as it has to be. I want a Lateo procedure. I have her full attention again. Her stare is so intense, I look around her desk, wondering when she took down the photo she had of me as a kid on Dad's shoulders, with Eric in his lap, the three of us in my grandpa's recliner chair. Aaron, please, whatever it is. No, Mom, listen. Because time is very important here, and I'm already feeling crazy and scared of what might happen if I can't have this procedure. What could you possibly want to forget? I hope this isn't hard to hear, but I sort of have had something. I thought I would spit it out. But no matter the possibilities of forgetting this moment, living in the now, with this weight, still feels pretty impossible. I had something going on with Thomas. Maybe you guessed that because you have eyes. She rolls her chair over to me and grabs my hand. Okay. But what's wrong? Me. You're not wrong, my son. She gives me a side hug, resting her head on my shoulder. I don't know what you were expecting would happen. That I would hit you with a belt? Maybe rub some cleansing oil on you? I wish you could. I cry, because there's nothing like my mom telling me I'm okay the way I am to really scare me about living with this heartache forever. I want a reboot, Mom. It's not working with Thomas. I know I said I would be more open after what I put you through in April, so I'm telling you now, this whole thing with Thomas was a major awakening for me. But he's still sleeping, and I'm not sure I can do or say enough to wake him up. What are you asking of me?
to make me right.
She's sobbing a little too, and she squeezes my hand.
Thank you for being honest with me, Aaron. I have said it before, and I'll say it always, but I love you, however you are. You're being impulsive about Lateo. We can talk this over or schedule another appointment with your therapist. Dr. Slattery is a joke. He's a waste of your money. Lateo is the real damn deal, Mom. They say you can't choose whether or not you like boys or girls, but you can help me get back on the right track.
I move out from under her head because she's making me feel like I'm begging for a new Hess truck at Christmas. Kids my age can be impulsive, I get that, but when your son, who almost killed himself, asks for a better life overnight, your job as a parent should be as simple as signing on the dotted line.
No, Aaron.
She lets go of my hand and stands. I have to go to work. We can talk about this later tonight and
forget it.
I storm out of her office, speeding up when she calls my name over and over. I only wipe the tears from my cheeks when I reach the street corner. I pull out my phone. I really want to call Thomas or Genevieve, but I can't. I can't hit up Brendan either, because I'm pretty sure he's pieced together all the Thomas-shaped pieces of my cataclysmic puzzle. The same goes for the other guys. I go through my phone book, scrolling past Baby Freddy, Brendan, Colin, Dad, Dion. I call Evangeline. She doesn't pick up. I sink against the wall, wondering where the fuck my place is in this fucking universe that fucked me over. Thoughts I shouldn't be thinking creep up on me. They're telling me to seek out oblivion, where rest and happiness await. I cry harder, because it's not what I want, but once again I am beginning to feel like it is the only solution. My phone rings. It's not Thomas or Genevieve, but it's the next best hope.
Evangeline, hey. Hey, kiddo. Sorry I missed your call.
Don't worry about it. I need to ask for a favor. And in that moment, I realize that one lie will help me reach my life of lies, my only way out. It's not like this lie would hurt anyone. I've been talking with my mom about getting some Lateo work done, but she can't come with me. Are you around this afternoon? She's quiet for a bit.
I'll meet you in an hour. Grab a spot in line, okay?
There's a chance for my happy oblivion, after all. I've been in line on the corner of 168th Street for close to an hour now, waiting to get into the Lateo Institute. I got bored and asked the older man in front of me what he was here for, and he told me he wanted to forget his cheating ex-wife before he kills both her and the 20-year-old she slept with. After that, I let a couple of people skip me. When I finally get inside, I grab a ticket and sit down in a waiting room as big as the one at the DMV. On every wall, there are two TVs, all rolling out the same Lateo videos. Question. How safe is this procedure? Answer. Very safe. Our non-surgical approach allows all memories in the blueprint to be targeted and altered with molecular precision. Our new FDA-approved pills are absolutely painless. For side effects, please review the brochures, available at all help windows. Question. Where does the name Lateo come from? Answer. Lateo is the Spanish translation of Lethe, the mythological river of forgetfulness in Hades. Question. Who is the brain behind Lateo? Answer. Dr. Cecilia Inez Ramos, Ph.D., M.D., a Nobel Prize-winning neurosurgeon, developed the procedure. Dr. Ramos unlocked the science of alteration while researching psychological disorders. She has a unique personal connection. Her sister suffers from paranoid schizophrenia. In the struggle to improve the quality of a beloved sibling's life, Dr. Ramos uncovered opportunities to fold memories over each other. Lateo grew from there. Dr. Ramos resides in Sweden. You can learn more about Lateo's origins in her scientific journals, and more about Dr. Ramos in her biography, The Woman Who Made the World Forget. Question. How much does it cost to forget? Will my insurance cover this? Answer. Costs for procedures vary per alteration. For a list of medical plans we are currently accepting, please review the brochures available at all help windows. Question. Can patients remember what they've forgotten? Answer. Yes. Buried memories can resurface. This is known as unwinding. They are typically triggered by detailed reminders, often care of loved ones, of exact moments or traumas. Specific scents, sounds, or images can also trigger an unwinding. Question. How long are patients put under for the procedure? Answer. Length of time varies per alteration. Some patients stay overnight, and others are released sooner. Question. Is this procedure total bullshit? Answer. No. This procedure is not total bullshit. Okay, the last one is in my head. But it's exactly the wise-ass type of question I would have submitted back before Kyle pulled this little magic trick on himself. The ticket queue is only on 184, and I'm 224. At least that will give Evangeline some extra time to get off the line outside and in here. Seriously, the amount of lines in this place alone makes me think that if you knock one person into another, it'll create a crazy domino effect, and we'll all be amnesiacs by the time the last person falls. There you are, Evangeline says, sitting down beside me. She's in this silk vest that reminds me of the one Genevieve wore on a movie date last year. But she's still the same old babysitter I knew. Care to catch me up? Everything's a shit show. That's pretty much it, Evangeline. Language? She says. Talk to me. Her eyes dart around the room. I can't blame her. Mine did, too. When I was younger, did you ever think that I might be... I thought I'd be able to spit this out. Did you ever think that I might like other guys? Not at all. Why do you ask? Do you believe you might be gay? I am. But I don't want to be. I want to be made straight. Why do you believe being gay is the root of your problems? She spitfires. I almost feel like she's judging me. I had a girlfriend who loved me, and good friends. Now I don't. And that all changed when I met an idiot with zero direction in his life. I'm trying not to sound defensive. If this procedure means I can forget my feelings for Thomas and the pain that would come from a goodbye, I need it. I'm not happy with who I am. That's enough, right? Evangeline searches my face. Listen, kiddo. Even if what you're asking of me is possible, and if you had every last penny needed to cover the costs, this isn't a facility you can simply walk into and schedule work to be done this weekend. Your mother needs to sign off on everything, for starters, and they would force you to speak with therapists over a stretch of time first to determine if your feelings can be resolved over time. I don't answer. She massages my shoulder, and I flinch because it's the same thing I do to Thomas on Friday before kissing him. This is one of many memories I need to live without if I'm ever going to be able to live at all. I know the pain you're going through, Aaron, she says. Yeah, because you're older and I'm just a fucking kid, right? Language, Evangeline mouths. We sit in silence while I wait for my number to be called. Then she straightens. Someone is waving to her from the other side of the room. Do you know that woman? I ask. Stay here, she whispers. Don't leave. Yeah, like I'd leave the place that has my ticket to Elysium. A place of perfect happiness. I watch as she checks on this woman before returning my attention to the FAQ slides. Evangeline is back at my side a few minutes later, and I ask her again if she knows that person. Sort of. She interviewed me for an assistant job at Hunter College's Department of Philosophy. Didn't realize she was pursuing a procedure. Apparently, she's on her sixth and possibly final appointment to have memories altered about her husband's affair before he died so she could remember the good and only that. Funny, huh?
More like messed up, I say.
Guess philosophers are proletario. My number is finally called, and I speedwalk to the help window, almost knocking into a crying man. A brunette in a gray lab coat, Hannah, according to her name tag, clears the screen on her sleek tablet and smiles at Evangeline and me.
Hello, welcome to Lateo. How can I help you?
There must be cameras on her, because no one working a customer service counter is ever this nice.
I don't have an appointment or anything, but I want a procedure.
Absolutely. May I see your ID?
I pass her my ID. The photo of me is in desperate need of a haircut. Hannah punches in some keys at a crazy speed, and after some chimes, she looks up at me again.
All right, Mr. Soto. What distresses bring you to Lateo today?
I'm not feeling very happy, I say, and then I do something that is really downright despicable of me. I place my arm on the counter, and I make sure she can see the smiling scar on my wrist and the hopes she'll take me seriously.
For how long have you been feeling this way?
A while.
Could you be a little more specific, Mr. Soto?
A few days, really, but it's been building for months.
Did any event precipitate these feelings?
Yes.
Could you be a little more specific, Mr. Soto?
Are you going to be the one who handles my altering?
No, Mr. Soto. I'm simply collecting information for our technicians.
I'd rather keep my secrets as secretive as possible. If possible, I say.
Hannah turns to Evangeline.
Are you his relative?
Family friend, Evangeline says. Hannah plays with her tablet some more.
I can schedule a consultation for Mr. Soto with our team for the 12th of August at noon.
She reaches into a drawer, pulls out a folder, and slides it toward Evangeline. Before I can demand to be seen sooner, she says,
I'm afraid that is the earliest we can do at this time.
We look forward to seeing you in August. She calls the next number, and Evangeline leads me outside.
I'm in a daze, looking up at the squat building in the summer heat, not sure how to process what exactly happened just there.
I'm sorry that didn't go the way you wanted it to,
Evangeline says, looking pretty defeated herself.
This will give you some time to make sure this is what you really want.
It's not only what I want, I say. It's what everyone wants.
I hide the folder under my mattress like it's porn or something, and I go outside to grab an iced tea at Good Foods. I'm about to pay Mohad when I catch Brendan in the pastries aisle, stuffing coffee cakes into his pockets.
Do you need a dollar?
I ask, and he jumps.
I can spot you a dollar if you promise not to hit me.
He doesn't flip me off or tell me to go fuck myself, so I walk over and hold out the $1 bill.
I have money, Brendan says. I'm trying to save up.
Okay.
You going to snitch and get me banned?
Not if you let me buy that for you.
Truce?
Brendan smirks and hands me the coffee cakes.
Truce.
I buy everything at the counter from Mohad. I feel something like hope as we leave the store together. There's always an awkward silence after our fights. It happened in third grade after he dissed me in front of the entire class for sleeping in the same bed as my parents. It happened again on Christmas morning a few years ago when he stole a controller my mom had gotten me out from under my tree and claimed his father had gotten him the same one. And even though Brendan was the one who attacked Thomas, I'm guilty for not choosing his side.
I'm sorry, I say. My bad, too.
Brendan tears open the coffee cake and asks,
You want to play Manhunt? I was thinking about getting a game going.
We go to the first court, where everyone is gathered around the Skelzies board. They're talking about how to get a girl wet with only their fingers, and how you don't need a condom if you're hitting it from the back. I don't try to fake a laugh or chime in. I wouldn't do that anyway. And this way, it's natural. I can look and feel the same, like I'm still one of them. Brendan nods, as if to say, I'm cool again, and all is good. Fuck, Skillsies. Manhunt time. Aaron already volunteered to be Hunter. Asshole, I mutter as everyone runs off into different directions. I check underneath cars for Skinny Dave, but he must actually be sober, because he wasn't dumb enough to hide there today. I do a quick sweep for where Me Crazy might be hiding down here. No luck, and I'm cool with maybe never solving that mystery because spending more time with that insane bastard isn't high up on my to-do list. I get back to the courtyard and spot Fat Dave up on the roof, and he moons me. I flip him off. I see Nolan and Dion and chase them as they run out of the gates. They split up right when I see Thomas walking toward me. And for a second, I think about catching him, until I remember he's not part of the game. He's actually here. Thomas quickly says, I know things are weird, even though we didn't want them to be. He looks me straight in the eyes, and I try and catch my breath. I don't know whether to float or sink yet. But you're my best friend, and I miss having you around. I know you don't actually have a thing for me. Drinking confuses people like that, so we'll call the whole thing taboo and not talk about it for the next 10 years or so. Let's hang and talk about Sun Warden while I apply to a job to... Why can't I like you? Because it wouldn't work out in the long run, Thomas says. Because I don't fit into your little hierarchy of needs. Because I'm straight, Stretch. His voice has an edge now. I thought we wanted to forget it ever happened. Yeah, well, forgetting isn't as easy as you're making it sound. My throat tightens. I can't sit around you and act like nothing happened, or to wait around for you to figure things out. There's nothing to figure out, Thomas says. I know I can be really confused about what I should be doing with my life and how I feel like I don't belong. But I have no doubts about what gets my heart going and my dick hard. That's not meant to be a blow to you, Stretch, but it's just the way I'm wired. I was like that once. I denied it. But then I met you over there by that fence, and it flipped around everything I ever thought about myself. I didn't want to be unhappy, so I stopped dating someone I can't actually love. I get it if you need more time. I can't live up to this fantasy playing out in your head, Thomas shoots back. Without thinking about it, I hug him and hold on to him, even though he's not hugging me back. I can't promise I'll wait. I don't think the pain will vanish the way Evangeline thinks it will. I'm sure waiting for unfulfilled expectations will only make weeks feel like months, months feel like decades, and decades feel like my end of days. If there's no happiness waiting for me there, then I lived a life without laughs and smiles, and that's not living at all. I turn my back on him. I move back into the complex and walk across the third court, when two big hands grab my shoulders. I half expected to be Thomas spinning me around to lead me somewhere private, but instead, I find myself falling forward and rolling into a pillar by my building. Fear chokes me. I doubt it's those bastards from the Joey Rosa projects, because I had nothing to do with Me Crazy beating their boys down. This attack is personal. These are my friends. I pick myself up. It's Me Crazy, backed by Brendan, Skinny Dave, and Nolan. Too many to outrun. Fight back. Faggot. Me Crazy challenges, rolling his eyes back until they're just white. He's going to start pounding on his head any moment now, and I'll be laid out. What the fuck is your problem? I ask him. Me Crazy saw you hugging your boyfriend, Me Crazy says. Nolan chimes in. Why are you playing with other dudes? You had a bomb-ass girlfriend, and Bren told us you stopped hitting that.
It's for your own good, Brendan says, too ashamed to look me in the eye like the man he wants me to be and thinks he is.
He cracks his knuckles and rocks back and forth, and I almost laugh at how ridiculous he looks. I get in his face, so close that I could kiss him and really piss them all off. Come on, guys. Try and beat it out of me. The rules of the street aren't clear, but I've known people, Brendan actually, who walked away from a serious beatdown from our rival high school because he kicked one guy's ass and earned everyone's respect. Maybe if I fuck up Brendan, or Skinny Dave, who looks too high for his own good, that'll get them to back off. Brendan shoves me. I recover. I shove him back and slam into him with the hardest headbutt I can swing without knocking myself out. Brendan, somewhat dazed, fakes right and swings a hard uppercut into my chin with his left. I kick him in his knee, hard, like he taught me, and he collapses, so I knee him in the nose. Then Skinny Dave comes at me with a sucker punch, but it's me crazy who actually tackles me down to the ground, and I know I've lost. I can't move out from under his grip. Now it's all pain. Resisting gets harder, and everything becomes dimmer and blurrier with each punch to my face and each blow to my chest. Me Crazy is roaring while he strangles me, and Skinny Dave and Nolan stomp me out. I shout and twist and cry and guard my face with the one arm I manage to get free. Me Crazy gets off of me, and I think it's over. I'm so dizzy. The ground I'm crumbled on is spinning around, first one way and then another. I don't even bother trying to crawl away. I feel like I'm falling. No, someone is picking me up. I confused up with down, but the terrifying sensation of Crazy Train mode is insanely familiar. He runs with me over his shoulder, and I hear Brendan yelling at him to stop, that he's taking it too far, but Me Crazy keeps running. I don't know where we're going until we crash through the glass door of my building, and I'm sprawled across the lobby floor. There's an explosion in the back of my head, a delayed reaction. Blood fills my mouth. This is what death feels like, I think. I scream like someone is turning 100 knives inside of me, spitting up blood as I do. And I'm not crying because of the attack. I'm crying because there's new noise in my head. And it builds from a couple faded echoes into an uproar of jumbled voices. All the memories I once forgot have been unwound. Part 0. Unhappiness. Here today, gone tomorrow. Age 9. It's way past my bedtime, but I can't sleep because of a really real nightmare. Myself. There's been enough crying in my family lately, but I can't control myself. Mom tries to calm me down in the kitchen with cranberry juice. It's stupid, but I cry harder, because I'm jealous of Brendan and how his house is better with better juice and better video games because his parents have more money than we do. Mom hugs me to her shoulder as I sit on the kitchen counter. Baby, you can tell me anything. I love you as you are. I don't want to tell anyone, but I'm scared something will happen to me if I don't. Baby, my son, you are safe. Nothing bad will ever happen to you, I promise. I take a deep breath. I can't say it. I'm too scared. Eric pops up from around our old and busted stereo system and shouts, "You're gay! No one cares!" "No! No! I'm scared I'm going to become crazy, like Uncle Connor, and eat too many pills and die!" I punch this plastic bin, where we keep packets of salt, pepper, and ketchup Mom pockets from restaurants, and everything spills onto the floor. "You're an asshole!" I got my bad temper and bad mouth from Dad. I jump off the counter to punch him in his stupid face, but Mom drags me back. "Aaron! Aaron, stop! Eric, back to bed! Now!"
Eric doesn't taunt me like he usually does whenever Mom or Dad or my cousins hold me back from fighting him. He shrugs.